Hey, I'm Jason Warner Smith. I played Gavin on AMC's The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Golden Spiral Media. Don't turn it off.
Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, episode 38. Good Out Here review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And it's just the two of us tonight. We're doing it old school. Mark, who was going to join us, his computer fried, so he's unable to join us. So hopefully he will be back in the next week or two. But
and we wish him a get well soon.
Yeah,
because that's not a fun thing to go through.
Definitely. All right, so we are here to discuss Season 4, Episode 3, which is titled Good Out Here. And it was good in here. but we'll get to that in a minute. We've got some additional feedback to share, just little tiny things. Well, one thing tiny and one thing not so tiny. From the last episode, and one thing that's been accumulating the last couple of weeks that I wanted to address. So let's do some. Simon, what do you have to say?
We can talk about it. Done talking. Time to listen.
I still miss that he's not around anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Well, GJ Koyanagi, definitely one of our resident Canadians, although we've got several Canadian listeners, yours truly as well. But, well, I'm kind of a weird Canadian because I'm Canadian, but not, you know, haven't lived in Canada now for almost 18 years. So, but I'm still technically Canadian. Anyway, GJ also reports that Kevin Zegers is Canadian, which I didn't realize, but I looked it up and sure enough he is. Boy, those vultures, they got some funky clothes, don't they? I really noticed it today this episode when we got a look at him leaning over the pickup truck to talk to Madison.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Holy smoly. Anyway, we also got some feedback that's been accumulating over the last week or so that I wanted to address. We always mention Ken from Chicago, but we're not always good at giving the Twitter love. So I want to let him know that we're thinking of him. And he's heard me get all distressed about the timeline. And this doesn't have anything specific about the Fear timeline. I'm not even sure if Ken's watching Fear. I think he is. Ken, if you are, you can let us know. But he's got some timeline stuff that I think he came up with all this himself, so kudos to him. But he says at 1 month, the fall to Rick wakes from coma and walks away. You need serious physical therapy if you haven't used muscles more than a month. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. And to me, I can deal with a month a lot easier than I can deal with 2 months in mm-hmm. in a coma.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially, you know, assuming that there's been someone that has changed his bag at least one time between, say, Shane's last appearance, and you know, when Rick wakes up, that does be, and there was some webisodes that would indicate that. So that's very possible. At 4 months, he says fall to season two end. Lori's pregnant, but showing and unsure if Rick's the father. Baby bumps show in 3 to 4 months. At 9 months, fall to mid of season three, baby Judith born, and obviously Lori expunged.
That's a choice word.
Yeah. By the late Carl. At 18 to 26 months, that brings us to fall to mid season six. Judith is standing and walking. The time jump after Carl loses an eye. Baby first steps are at 9 to 12 months, and they walk well around 14 to 17 months. Maggie and Glenn confirm they've made a pancake. Hashtag thanks, Abraham. At 20 to 29 months, that he's suggesting is the fall to the season 8 finale. Maggie's late and suspects pregnancy 1 to 2 months after she and Glenn were hashtag pouring the bisquick. Ergo, mid season 6 to season 8 time frame began about 1 to 2 months into Maggie's pregnancy and lasted 2 to 3 months, since she isn't showing and baby bumps show in 3 to 4 months. Okay, so to that, I would say, where does the Fear the Walking Dead timeline fit into that? So we assume that somewhere, like, how long do you think it took for Morgan to walk to Texas?
I mean, that's because, well, he walked and then drove and then walked. And, you know, we do see that kind of thing. But
a month?
I would say somewhere around that.
Yeah. And then we know that he grew an eggplant, and that was probably, you know, 4 to 5 months roughly. So that would put it, I would say, around the 3 years. So then it's a question of, in this show, where things are after that. So, like I say, if you give Morgan, say, about a month to get to Texas and then 5 months to grow the eggplant, that puts him roughly at about 30, somewhere 30 to 36 months, I guess. You know, so somewhere around 3 years. And then if you backtrack from there, let's see. So it took, they were a year on the diamond, and we know that it was about the fall at the dam supposedly happened around the same time frame as the CDC.
Okay.
So that's what I've heard anyway. So that would mean that, and then we know a year beyond that.
To the diamond.
Right.
Or, you know, or at least the time that they're a diamond. But yeah. Because then, you know, there's whatever happened to where, you know, why did I just forget her name?
Oh, well,
Matt, we, is it like?
Yeah. If the fall of the dam happened at the end of season one of of The Walking Dead, so then it would take Madison some time to collect everyone, and then some time for them to get to Texas, and then time to set up the diamond, and a year of the diamond. So I'm guessing that might be around season six. Around the same time frame? I don't know.
Well, I mean, it roughly probably puts it in that kind of area. But, I mean, you know, whether or not they're going to, you know, we'll be told exactly, like, oh, here's exactly, you know, the time frame. But that does start to make a little sense because, you know, we don't see anything yet to this point of when the dam blew up and Madison waking up on the bank, and then, like, you know, there was like people there, to like now here it is, the diamond a year later, and she found everybody and their stories there. So yeah, I mean, it's, it seems like that's kind of roughly putting it somewhat in line. Mm-hmm. So I can agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway,
it's interesting. I was like, he did a lot of work to like kind of go through, kind of yeah. make some sense.
Well, kudos to Ken. And Ken, if you're hearing this, if you are listening to or watching Fear, and you have some thoughts about how the events of Fear fit into the timeline, I'd be curious. Like, we don't know. I'm thinking maybe the stuff over the vulture stuff maybe happens over a few months, and then it's been a few more months since, you know, they turn feral. So, you know, that roughly puts it, well, we already know that would, you know, like we said, that's probably 3 years down.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, let's move on to this episode. So we are covering season 4, episode 3, titled Good Out Here. That's written by Shintaro Shimosawa, co-executive producer of Fear. Obviously, is new to the show. I haven't looked up to see Shintaro's credentials, but I know that it's been directed by Dan Liu, and I've seen his name plenty times on The Walking Dead as an editor, and he directed last season's season 8, episode 4, Some Guy. And, of course, that was a big episode. Mm-hmm. And something big happens into that episode that I know upsets certain listeners. So we won't talk about it. But just remember to be kind to your animals. All right. So let's get to our ratings for this episode. So, Kyle, what did you think of Good Out Here?
I gave it a 9.1. I need your stories, please.
All right. Well, I love this episode, and I only had one flaw. And everyone, we were just talking about it before we started recording, that listeners pretty much nailed the awesome sauces. So neither of us have anything. So we're going to just fly through that. But I give this a 9.9, which is my highest Fear rating, and definitely one of the highest of the franchise. Puzzling creatures, or Evil Enid 2. I would say Charlie is the Enid that a lot of people thought Enid was. A true spy. And damn you, Charlie. That's all I have to say. All right. Well, we have some listener ratings. So, Kyle, let's let you start it off.
All right. All right. Cheryl Fox, she gives it a 9 out of 10. Blue El Caminos.
Mark Olivier Dufour, he says, so disappointed. I give this episode 6.5 deer antler points out of 10.
And Steve Brown gives it a 7 out of 10 empty and available gas cans.
Glynis Goltz, she says, and she has been loving this this season so far. She says, another excellent episode in spite of what happened, or because of it. I can't decide. She rates it another perfect score of 10 out of 10 WTF, and that stands for What the Flowers. What the Blue Flowers. She had blue in parentheses. Yeah, parentheses. She also says, this Fear the Walking Dead season 4 is just killing it so far. Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. Very impressed so far. You know, and I rated last week kind of, you know, like an okay 8.5, but I think that was a little low. I do think that was in the 9s as well. Yeah, so I agree. Well, mm-hmm. Moving on.
All right. Deanna Patterson, she says, I rate this episode 8 out of 10. What in the what just happened on Fear the Walking Dead?
And Tilly Creary, we kind of combined the part that I guess wouldn't fit into the regular feedback because it's pretty short. So we gave it here. She says, I give this episode 8 out of 10, Fields of Blue Flowers. Then she says, I really need to know what happened between then and now that caused that girl to want to shoot Nick. I need more flashbacks. I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Too. So awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce.
All right. Steve Brown says that infected that Al killed with a weapon I couldn't recognize. And I think Alicia also used that weapon. It was some kind of like hollow, well, not hollow, but a pipe with a bunch of like, it was almost like a mesh pipe. I don't know.
It looked like the, like to a gun, like to a machine gun, like the, what do you call it? Like a, to disperse heat. That's what I thought it was. It was like part of possibly like a, you know, part of a machine gun, like the barrel, the heat sink thing, whatever they call that. But
yeah. And Steve, I know you're kind of a weapons guy, so I'll ask you that weapon. I was curious, like, especially when I saw Alicia use it, I noticed that it certainly had the stabbing part down, mm-hmm. but I couldn't figure out how it could kill someone with like a chop. Because it didn't look like it was something that could, like, you know, kill a walker that way. I don't know. I was curious. I guess we'll see that weapon more, but it looked like something light yet lethal. But I couldn't figure out how it could, like, penetrate on the side unless it was kind of like a bat.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I'd have to go look at it again because it just, yeah, I'm just trying to think off the top of my mind. I'm not sure exactly what it was.
He continues, John Dory, he did not disappoint much, I know. I just love that character. Yeah, and I do too. Mm-hmm. And then he says, the reminder that no character is safe. Amen to that. I mean, you know, the death of Nick, I mean, I don't think any of us saw it coming. I mean, mm-hmm. like, the only way you would have is if you knew that he was going off the show. And you know, I hand it to both Frank Delane and, for that matter, the showrunners. I mean, they were able to really make this a secret.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree. Know,
on The Walking Dead, so many of the deaths have been spoiled by, like, casting news and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. And, you know, like sites like The Spoiling Dead and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. You know, in this case, no one was, I mean, they were able to keep this one a secret, you know. Like, even with, I would say, with Carl's death, there was some rumbling there. You know, some people had, you know, seen him in L.A. and I remember hearing rumblings about the possibility that he had been bitten. But, I mean, this one, I did not see it. Another one I'd say would be Cliff Curtis. I mean, we heard the casting news about him, you know, getting, yeah, with the Avatar movies. But this one, nobody got it, which, anyway, kudos. All right, next.
Cheryl Fox, she says, I have way too many awesome things about this episode, but to keep it short, the budding relationship between Morgan and Nick. When Morgan uses his stick on Nick, I was cracking up. I was too.
Yeah.
Then, as a callback to The Walking Dead, Nick shares his peanut butter protein bar with Morgan. Holler to Michonne. And Nick's anger was more than I was ready for this episode. I liked that Morgan saw where Nick was heading and tried to talk him down. All life is precious. I don't recall him, being Nick, being like this before. It was almost over the top. I believe it was because he felt the vultures were exploiting Charlie.
Yeah. Mm. I wonder about that. And then, you know, we have to, the elephant in the room is, you know, what happened with Madison and or what they think happened with Madison. So I think that kind of informs Nick's character as to him reacting and, you know, killing Mr. Mustache guy. Mm-hmm. Mustache and sideburns. With the, I tell you. Pimento boy. Here we go.
that's better.
All right. Glynis is next. And she has a few. She says, the before and now timeline stories linked by the blue flowers between Nick Morgan and Nick and Madison, showing that there's hope. The blue flowers depict hope, I think. And of course, the choice to kill or not kill, a decision that could change the course and outcome of lives. Next one, Nick's death scene was done so well when you least expected it. When you're thinking, okay, he's safe after killing that vulture and lulled into thinking the danger has now passed. Bam, a crack of a gunshot. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And then the last thing she says, and I agreed with this one. In fact, I did have this down as my awesome sauce. The calls out to the Walking Dead. She says, the hooter, which she says horn, blaring out in the SWAT truck like the Walking Dead season 6, episode 1, first time again, and season 6, episode 2, JSS. And I think also season 6, episode 3, thank you. We still had the horn going off in that. Mm-hmm. The peanut butter protein bar appearances. And mentions from The Walking Dead season 3, episode 12, clear, season 6, episode 1, first time again. And both of those I remembered, but I did forget about season 6, episode 15, east. And that is, of course, when Morgan is going off to look for Carol, and Rick and Morgan aren't, you know, sure if they'll see each other again, and they discuss the protein bar. And Rick tells Morgan that Michonne ate his protein bar, his peanut butter protein bar. The bar progressed from being stolen, confessed about, to being shared, illustrating people's traits. And I had some other stuff. Obviously, the flowers were a callback to season 4, episode 14, The Grove. And from the pilot episode of The Walking Dead, Days Gone By, Alicia crawling under the SWAT vehicle, which I guess they call an MREP, and I didn't write down what MREP stands for, but it is reminiscent of Rick crawling under the tank from the pilot. Looked very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I agree with all of that. Thank you, Glynis, and like I said, we're like two minds when it comes to this stuff, because you like to recite episode numbers and titles just like I do.
All right. Well, Tilly Creary, she's next. And she says, I love the camera work and visuals with Nick, Madison, and the flowers. It was a simple way to tie all of them together by matching the blue of their clothing to the blue of the flower. I thought it was foreshadowing that Madison is dead, but it turned out to be more for Nick. Sad that he's gone, but the cinematography was beautiful. And I have to totally, totally agree. That's why it's like coming up with like awesome sauce. A lot of you already had some of the exact same awesome sauce as I had. But that whole scene, as horrible it was, just the way they shot it, and even like where, like when he gets shot, and then, you know, he's standing there looking at Charlie, but then it's just like, wait, the way the camera almost kind of like pulled back, and then you just see him slowly fall over, and it was just like kind of, I don't know, it was just, it was really, really, the way they did it, I was just like pretty amazed. I loved it.
Yeah, and I do have something else that I would consider an awesome sauce, but I'm not going to talk about this because we are instead going to talk about it in the weak sauce. So unless you have anything else you want to bring up, let's move on to the weak variety.
You're worthless and weak!
Why don't you read that one, even though your name's not there?
Okay. All right. Glennis Goltz, she says, again, with a 10-10, should not have any weak sauces, but Fear the Walking Dead, please put the color, she says, yeah, not from around here, back. I get it that the two timelines are being highlighted that way, and there is the before and now flashed up on the screen, but we've got brains to work it out ourselves, since we have to contend with Westworld's plus four timelines going on.
Yeah, and I'm kind of in a weird situation right now because when it comes to Westworld, because I've been editing Westworld cast the last couple of weeks for Podcastica, and I am not currently watching Westworld. I watched season one, but I don't have HBO right now, so I'm actually going to probably wait until Fear is done and for me to get a month trial, and then I'll binge it near the end of the season. That's kind of my plan. So I'll get caught up. But, I have to say I don't agree with this. This was going to be one of my awesome sauces because I'm loving the use. I absolutely love it. This is something, you know, they tried to do in season six. And, you know, I was telling that story a couple of episodes back where I was stuck at a Walmart trying to watch the episode on my phone. And I kept thinking, streaming it basically from my dish hopper. And I every time it would go black and white, I thought that the stream was all screwed up. So it just put me in a rage, and it took me, I did not like that at all. This, I think, you know, and I went back over the weekend and I watched again the first episode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we see one thing I noticed that I didn't notice, you know, when we covered it the first time, is that when Morgan starts his travels, things are not faded, but he reaches a certain journey or a certain period in his walk, maybe halfway. Like by the time he reaches that one guy that was in the Jeep in Cherokee, by that time it had faded, but it was not faded the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So it showed the passage of time. And, you know, I've been using that as kind of and believe me, after this, it even makes more sense, the idea of the fade to consider death and, you know, things dying. And, you know, now we've literally seen Nick die here. So if anything, this seems to me more effective. So I really, really like what they've done. And another thing that I've done over the last week is I went back on the weekend and I rewatched the trailer. And I noticed that the shots that we see were just clever edits. So especially those with like the shots of Morgan and all that stuff, there wasn't any, they didn't have that faded look, at least through most of them.
To it, yeah.
That was added later. And I also noticed that some of those Madison Morgan clips from the trailer were just clever edits because we've already seen most of those things in the show. Like some of that stuff was from this episode. When Morgan says, you know, this is going to work out the way that you think, that was him talking to Nick, not Madison, you know, so makes me wonder more and more about what happened to her. But I have more to discuss about that in a bit. All right. Well, we got a short one from Deanna. She says, why did Nick leave the show? Many sad faces. Mm-hmm. Kyle, you're going to take Steve Brown's weak sauce, but we have to say, Steve, we had to change it a little bit because it looked like there was an edit or something got removed from it. So this is our interpretation of what you meant.
We did our best. All right. Well, Steve Brown, he says, Morgan going from being an invalid to badass and back again. That seems to be a recurring theme with him. And the horn on the truck. Couldn't they have just hit the button again to make it stop?
Yeah, I had this down as a weak sauce myself. That was how the show lost a point, or should I say a tenth of a point, because that was the one thing that it's like, come on, you know, turn off the horn for Pete's sake. It didn't make any sense. Like Morgan could have easily, you know, disabled the horn there before he left the truck. It didn't make any sense. Cheryl Fox is the last we have with Week's House. We should also say we've got a voicemail from Lara that, you know, has all of these as well. Another showcase winning voicemail. But anyway, she says, there wasn't anything weak about this episode for me except the pants that Mel wore when Madison and Nick were going out in a before flash. Did he raid the 90s closet? And I had mentioned that earlier, those vulture clothes. I don't know.
Yeah, they are.
When last week when we met the vultures, I had initially not noticed to the extent of their weird fashion sense, but you certainly noticed it this time around. It wasn't dark anymore. And like, I couldn't tell, were those pajamas he was wearing or?
They did kind of look a little pajama. Like they came across probably some big giant, like warehouse thrift store and just stocked up on like every last season's clothing.
All right. Well, you've got a couple weak sauces.
Again, it's like gas. Like, seriously, the SWAT truck is like the most inefficient vehicle in the entire zombie, and I call it apocalypse. it's still like, it just gets to me for some reason. And I let it slide, but it's just like that thing, as much as they're driving around, picking up people, this and that, everybody, it's just like, that thing has to get 0 miles to the gallon, and it just, how can she be driving that around still?
Yeah. And I guess you could also make comments about what's her name's driving, especially I heard one of the, it was actually on Walking Dead cast. There was an all female version with Rima was on there. Mm-hmm. And she was saying about, you know, the female stereotype about bad driving. Yeah, I have to agree with that. That's true. But yeah, the gas guzzling, I mean, you could pretty much say that every episode. So.
No, I know. And I just, it was when I was thinking of weak sauce and just like after they, you know, they go and get a big giant semi and they find enough gas laying around to fill that up or, you know, give it gas to haul, you know, to get to the SWAT truck. And then they pull the SWAT truck out and then they drive all the way back. And it's just like, kind of,
yeah,
it does kind of starts messing with, you know, the you know, reality of it for me.
And it does. Starts. Yeah.
And then the other part was Al, like, I'm starting to get a little bit annoyed with her because she's always like, she's like, give me your story and then I'll give you the flag. And it, when you really, really think about it, it's like, that's not a very powerful bargaining chip to hold over someone. Because, I mean, I am enjoying it because, yeah, I do want to see, you know, people's stories, or maybe actually what's on those tapes that she has. But it's kind of hard to believe that, you know, she's like, no. I'm not going to do what you say until you give me your story. And then, you know, that somehow has worth to someone that is living in the zombie apocalypse. And why any of those guys didn't just say, okay, whatever, and just gang up on her and beat her up.
Yeah. I will not disagree with that. And I will say that I listened to the Talking Dead podcast, not the show, mm-hmm. not Talking Dead, the show, but the Talking Dead, basically the first and longest running Walking Dead podcast out there, from Chris and Jason. And Chris was saying that he's also a little annoyed with Al at this point. It's kind of one note. And I would tend to agree. I still am really liking the character of Al. I think she's a badass. Loved her, you know, use of the gun while Alicia was going, you know, down there to secure the thing. But yeah, I would agree to an extent.
I guess some part of it too is like, almost like I kind of wish that they wouldn't show her harping on it so much. It's like, okay, we get that that's what she wants. And then it's kind of like, okay, you guys are working together to get this truck, or like they want more information, you know, find out more about the flag and all that stuff. But they keep putting her on screen to me like, give me your story. I want to record you. I want everything, you know, and then I'll give you the flag.
Yeah. Tell me a story. Yeah, I do agree to an extent on that. I would like to see a little more dimension of that. Now, I've got a little more to say about that in the show notes. So some specifics of that. But my weak sauce doesn't have to do with the actual show, but no Frank Delane on Talking Dead. And thank God Chris Hardwick, brought this up early on in the episode. And also I was very thankful to see the showrunners on here to kind of explain things, because they needed explaining. And we'll have more on that in the news section. But apparently he was in Europe and couldn't join them. And, you know, thankfully he said that they would try to get Frank in, you know, later on in the season. I mean, this isn't the end of Nick, because we're going to see him in the, the before sections. Because I think that this storytelling method is going to continue through at least the half season.
Mm-hmm. It does, but yeah, it is kind of sad to see him go. even though it's like, yeah, we just kind of, in a sense, maybe like kind of saw the future or got a glimpse of the future, but we're still going to be living through his story of before. But it's just the fact that we know that he is now gone. Well, that leads us into sad sauce.
Yeah. Well, you know, I will say, and I guess, you know, I'm still kind of processing this, but we talk about this in the news, but, you know, supposedly Frank Delane had requested to be off the show, you know, during season 3. And, you know, this was one of the first things that the showrunners had to mm-hmm. you know, talk about. So my big question is, you know, why didn't they just kill him off and not have him return from the dam? But then again, I think this whole storytelling structure, I don't think would work if Nick
wasn't it? Yeah.
Passed on. Yeah. Because, I mean, you'd kind of wonder what happened to Nick, but then you'd be wondering what happened to Nick and Madison for that matter, mm-hmm. you know.
Or if it was just any other character, you know, it was just kind of like, oh, but Nick's gone.
Yeah.
And then trying to replace that with, like, even Alicia, just it would change things a little bit because, yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. What, you know, we obviously have a lot more to see of him and his story. So,
yeah, I'm curious to see, you know, how much we're going to see in the flashbacks and how long that's going to last. Mm-hmm. Is that going to last throughout the whole season or just the half season? And, you know, and I really, really hope, I know Frank Delane, doesn't, you know, like talking to, media too much. And I think that actually worked, to his advantage in this time because, you know, the fact that he's kind of elusive, mm-hmm. You know, the story didn't leak and, you know, like, so it's impressive, but I do wonder about that. I think it will kind of you know, all come out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I did agree with what Steve said about the horn, because that drove me nuts. All right, so we have, of course, we have Sad Sauce.
All right, our first Sad Sauce comes from Glennis Goltz, and she says, Nick, I think Frank Delane made a bad choice here to leave the show. Whatever the real reason is, it sounds from some of the reports that he didn't like the direction it was going in with the change in the showrunners, etc. Anyways, I will be watching his IMDb with interest to see if his career takes off now that he's free to do other things. He's leaving just as Fear the Walking Dead has got its mojo back. So concerned about the future of Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, and I'm going to call it, and I don't have anything on this, but it had occurred to me, especially someone else, I think it might have been Laura, had mentioned this elsewhere, Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I mean, because, of course, His father, Stephen Delane, played Stannis Baratheon mm-hmm. on there. So, you know, and he could play a son or a relative, or he could play, you know, somebody else. But if Frank Delane had landed a spot on season 8 of Game of Thrones, that would totally make sense.
Yeah.
For him to leave the show. And I wouldn't have... you know, especially that season when it finally comes on next year, that's going to set some ratings records, especially for the show. And I wouldn't be surprised if it breaks Walking Dead records, you know, from No Sanctuary and that for cable. Because it's going to be huge when it comes back.
Yeah, it's going to pretty much be like the only show that anybody is watching.
I know. And
6 episodes is all, I think, is all it has. Like,
it's yeah.
Gonna be,
yeah. And they're supposed to be like supposedly like all movie length episodes. So it's going to be quite the thing. And if he, like I say, if he landed that, you know, like maybe the Sell Swords or something like that, you know, that Cersei's trying to get, or, you know, some other character. I don't know. If he were to land Game of Thrones, it would totally make sense to me. I, you know, this is nothing but speculation, but if he were, it would make sense.
Yep.
So, but I have to say, you know, I mean, His character, I know there's some people that hated him. I think some people hated the thought of him. Like, you know, Ruthie, I don't think she ever liked Nick. And, you know, she doesn't like seeing drug use being glorified or anything like that. So I don't think she liked Nick too much. And there's just, I know there's some people that are glad to see him gone. I'm not one of them.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the only sad sauce that we got from listeners, but I have to give a sad sauce at, you know, and you could say awesome sauce in a way, but Alicia Debnam Carey's performance crying over Nick, that was, you know, after the shock had worn off, after the first viewing when I watched it, you know, on subsequent mm-hmm. watches, especially, it was really sad seeing her go through that. And I definitely, you know, I haven't made a secret that I like to, well, I don't like to cry, but this and The Walking Dead have, these shows have made me cry. And that scene certainly did make me cry. I mean, it was just so devastating. I felt like, you know, I had gotten punched in the gut after this. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she was so good. And, you know, I really felt for her character. And for that matter, you had Alicia, who we don't know what happened to Madison. So this could have been the only family that she thinks she has. We have Luciana, who, you know, obviously she was Nick's girlfriend or, you know, significant other. So she had a tie to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Strand, and, you know, they'd certainly become, you know, very close friends. And, you know, especially when it comes to the alpaca lips, that if, you know, he'd become like family. So, it, you know, it was really sad seeing them. And I could even feel the sadness that Morgan and even Al and John were feeling over it. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
It's definitely sad.
Yeah. No, and I agree, because that was my sad sauce. It was just like, I mean, it was like, of course, Nick dying, but it was also like Alicia and Strand and Luciana. Like, it was like the group. And one of the things, I mean, yes, The Walking Dead, I've had times where I was like, I cried, you know, it's like, oh, that's sad. Like, I mean, you know, Carl, just kind of like think about like, oh no, it's like, that's Carl. Like, you know, that's sad. And I have, you know, got a little teary eyed because I was like, oh, I didn't want him off the show. But for some reason though, now that we're at this point, you know, we're in season four, and it's just the one thing that is working for me on this show is that there is no comic. There is no thing that's already been written down on paper that we all would have access to if we didn't try to stay away from it. You know, where in telling where the story's going. Like, this is completely like, we don't, you know, we're here in the moment with them as we see it when it airs. And I just have this so much more meaningful feelings towards these characters. And just like seeing Nick being shot, which for me, like, you know, I'm online all the time, but I never, you know, came across anything about him. And when this happened, I literally was like, my mouth was on the floor. I was like, what? And then once, you know, Alicia showed up, and then Strand was there, and then Luciana, and it's like, and you start thinking about like back to season one, how they're all just like hanging out, you know, in that, you know, the neighborhood that got closed off. I mean, you start thinking about all the stuff that they've been through, and here's the Madison, like her, the kids, you know, they're the family. And then all of a sudden it was like, now they're losing one, and it's Alicia losing her brother, you know, Nick losing Alicia because he's dying. Then you also think about like, where's Madison, you know, like, so I don't know. It was this huge thing that just was like, I was bald and I was on the bus watching it the second time. And I literally was like sitting there trying to like not cry in front of like all these strangers. But I mean, this was a sad, sad loss. I'm not happy with it. I'll be with it.
Can't say I blame you. Mm-hmm. All right. And now we have a what sauce.
What?
Go ahead.
All right. And Steve Brown, he says, where was Charlie and where did she go? And that's a good question.
Now, does Steve, do you mean where was Charlie before when you know, Nick had killed,
mm-hmm.
or
before she even joined up with.
Yeah. And then where did she go after, I guess? It's like I said in my rating. I mean, this is the Enid that people on The Walking Dead had thought and had hoped for in some cases all the way through. And, you know, they on Talking Dead, I don't think Chris Hardwick had asked that question, but I would have about Enid because, like, she literally is, you know, the spy, the double agent. And certainly mm-hmm. there was one thing that was said on that show, and that is that supposedly this Ennis was, you know, like family, I guess, to Charlie. He had, you know, taught her everything she knows, so to speak. And and Ennis is what's-his-face's brother, I guess, Mel. But in a lot of ways, well, there's actually more to say about her in the feedback. So I will hold off and say what I wanted to say there. But yeah, and I had a what sauce in here, and that was I had already said it. So about the Frank Delane, I couldn't remember where I put it, and here it is. All right, so let's go on to Simon again. But Simon would probably say about Nick's death.
Bullshit!
We can talk about it. Done talking. Time to listen.
All right. And here is that voicemail from Lara that we referred to earlier.
Hello, Brian, Kyle, and Mark. Well, I seriously needed some time to process this one. As an episode on a purely storyline basis, this was a 10 out of 10. Amazing, ballsy, shocking, unexpected. This was the most shocking death in the franchise since Laurie and T-Dog at the prison. But on an emotional basis, I give it a 1 out of 10. Because last week, Nick was one of my awesome sauces, and Frank Delane carried a huge part of this show. Even with the great new characters, I really don't know how I'm going to feel moving forward with fear. My awesome sauce is, funnily enough, Nick's death. Not that I liked it by any means, but they said on The Talking Dead that Frank Delane asked in season 3 to be written off the show, so I understand they have to do something about that, but I think the way they wrote him off was so much more creative and unexpected than it could have been. They could have killed Nick off last season at the dam, giving him a completely typical redemption arc and hero death, but instead they have Nick starting up this whole new friendship with Morgan, and then he ruthlessly kills Mustache Vulture, and we feel like this is going to be building up to a story about Morgan helping to teach Nick about all life is precious. They also use Madison's absence as a red herring, having us wonder if she's dead. And then literally out of the blue, Nick is dead and killed by the little girl that he befriended. This is some Game of Thrones level betrayal here. Also, a character dying as a consequence of his actions rather than a heroic death is far more complex of a story. It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Nick told Madison that he didn't like being on the outside because he was afraid of what he'd become. And then immediately after he takes his revenge on Ennis, he's killed by Charlie, who's also seeking her own revenge now. As far as story arcs go, that was amazing. This is some excellent writing. But damn! Damn, the rug was pulled out completely from under me. And as much as I hated Nick's death, I think this is going to be an episode that show watchers are going to remember and talk about for years. My other awesome sauce is that Nick killed Ennis. That dude was a douche, and he totally asked for it. My lame sauce and my sad sauce is Nick's death. I think this was going to be lame sauce, but really it's just sad. I'm so sad that Nick's gone. Nick was the heart of this group. Frank Delane is a wonderful actor, and he created Nick as someone who was charming at times, but also flawed and screwed up. But he was so human, and I always related to him. We have new characters now that I like, but I did not want to exchange one of my favorite OGs. I still want to watch Fear, and I want to love it, but getting over Nick's death is going to be so, so hard. I do have a what sauce, and it's, where the hell is Madison? And when she finds out about her beloved baby boy, I wonder if she's going to turn cold-blooded enough to take out Charlie. I think we know she has it in her, and I almost wouldn't be shocked if Fear went there with everything else they've done on this show so far. I had one last thought that came to me after sort of reflecting on the episode, and I don't like comparing the two shows. I'll really try not to after this. But after two seasons of preaching and moralizing and character waffling about the repercussions of violence and seeking revenge on the main show, these last 5 minutes of Fear put into sharp focus in the simplest and most tragic way possible, the circumstances of violence and vengeance. I don't know what to say. I'm heartbroken. I'm scared of where the show is going to go after this. But the storytelling is still really solid, and I'm definitely going to keep watching.
And again, another awesome showcase winning
yes.
voicemail from Laura.
I would say that this at least the Fear episodes and my Star Trek podcast are fortunate enough to get showcase winning award feedback every time. And you know, it's obviously, Laura, she's such a great advocate for this show. And I feel what she's going through right now, because it is really, this was a character that I had grown to really, well, I think I really liked him from the start, although I remember in season one when he was going back to the drugs, I did not care for too much. But yeah, I mean, this is a character that was very compelling. Some have called him the Daryl of this show, and you know, for them to kill him off, I mean, it is really really makes you wonder. Like, you know, like okay, I'll hold off in saying what I was about to say, because I know it's in the feedback coming up. But I agree about the creativity of this death versus the potential death at the dam. Like, it could have been sort of more, I guess, more convenient to kill him off at the dam, and, you know, he would have had the hero's arc and that. But this death, you know, when you said, Laura, about this being a Game of Thrones, you know, death in terms of betrayal, I would agree. And I have, especially on The Walking Dead, have, you know, harped on the fact that the show tends to move the plot according to plot points, and has a lot of times the characters acting out of character. And this was definitely something that happened in character. You know, obviously something really bad happened that Ennis did. So how that maybe fits into Madison and what's going on with that, or the fall of the stadium, you know, we don't know, but I have to think that fits in here somehow. And we don't know, but and maybe it has something to do with Charlie as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so he kills him. And, you know, I didn't mention in the awesome sauce, but that death was pretty awesome. And I liked how, you know, we saw that, like, revenge on Nick's face as he pushed the antlers down into mm-hmm. Ennis.
Yeah.
You know, that was really good and really effective. But like you said, Laura, he died as a result of his actions. So, because I don't think that Charlie would have killed him if he hadn't killed Ennis. And we don't know that whole story with her, and I hope we get that, you know, played out. And I have a feeling that that kid is going to be central to the story, although she seems to have lost the ability to speak. Yeah, and the showrunners are really showing to me that they're fans of the series and the franchise with this, you know, and the way that they did the callbacks and all of that. I guess I'll say it here because it occurred to me while listening to your feedback. I've noticed that there seems to be a fading of the use of the infected, and we're hearing other terms for it. Like I know John Dory calls them the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
I know that the vultures call it something else, but I can't recall what that is. Maybe I'll think of it during, you know, while we're still recording. But you know, they call them something else, and I always get a kick out. Possibly even Al had another term for it. Anyway, I love that because obviously there was no media. There seemed to be a media blackout while, you know, everything kind of hit the fan. So there was never, you know, like accepted term for it.
Right.
It's interesting. And they mentioned that, I think, in the first episode about what do you call them?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, do you have anything to say about Laura's feedback?
No, that I just, you know, it's, she definitely, I you know, she gives very, very good, very, very, like, great, you know, responses that I sometimes wish that I could bring to the show. But I agree with, like, everything she says. Just, like, it was awesome. It was sad. It was weak. It was strong. You know, like, the one thing I do get this with Nick, while it does suck that he is gone, it's also he's still not gone. Like,
yeah,
I'm glad that they didn't end it with the hero's redemption thing at the, you know, season three, and then we're starting a whole something new. Because I feel like, at least I'm glad he stayed with it, because I feel like there's a story. This just makes the story about what's before and what's now, and just how all this happened. And we'll still get to see him, and maybe, you know, there's other growth or something that will make his death even more tragic that we just haven't seen yet, and like how he got up to that point. Yeah. And then, so I'm liking how they are handling this season and with the reboot, and with, you know, there's just so much that they could have done wrong with having this crossover, and then, you know, Morgan being there. But like, one of the great things I did love about this episode was the play off of Morgan and Nick. And
yeah,
you know, yeah, their similarities, their differences. You saw that whenever he killed a douchebag, you know, it's like, yeah, it just adds this whole nother layer. So, you know, I'm glad. Thanks for, you know, bringing up some of those points, Laura, because this definitely could be a episode that everybody would be talking about for years.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think this is one of those episodes that I think should solidify people who were kind of on the fence to this show to continue to watch it, because I mean, this is something that The Walking Dead has struggled with, you know, the killing of major characters. And, you know, this is a major character. I mean, this is right up there with Travis dying. And that is definitely one thing that this show has over The Walking Dead. It is not afraid of killing main characters, and it has killed main characters in episodes that you don't expect them to die. You know, they're not happening in the last episode or the penultimate episode or the mid-season finale. I mean, yeah, especially season three, we did get some of that. Mm-hmm. But Travis dying in episode two, and certainly this is I like sat there watching this and my mouth was open for 20 minutes. I was just like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I was absolutely shocked when this happened. And I will say my first reaction was, WTF showrunners, what are you doing? So I was very glad, you know, and I'd heard Cheryl, who's next in our feedback, and Cheryl, thank you for your work again on collecting everything this week. She had sent me a message saying with a link to one of the articles that, you know, explained that this was something that Frank Delane wanted. And then that was a sigh of relief because I think some people were ready to rage quit the show. Mm-hmm. And I know on the TV Time app, which, you know, we're not, our podcast isn't featured, but my Star Trek Discovery podcast is one of the featured podcasts on there. But I still go in, you know, for fear. And, you know, some of the people that I was interacting with on there were saying that they were going to, you know, rage quit the show. And they didn't even care that, you know, he wanted it. But, you know, like, to me, you can rage quit the show if this was something that the showrunners wanted. But when you have to take the context of the fact that Frank wanted this, you know, right or wrong of him to want it, you have to, you know, put that into terms. And certainly, I think, to me, in this franchise, this goes right up there with the deaths of Laurie and, you know, to a lesser extent, T-Dog. And I say to a lesser extent because T-Dog got more lines that episode. So that put a target on him. But I certainly did not expect Laurie to die that episode. So for me, that, you know, goes right with that. You know, you could say Denise's death was similar. That wasn't spoiled. The only thing that spoiled it is, yeah, you take a doctor and you put them in peril, and on that show, they're going to die. but in terms of the way that she died, that was completely shocking. I mean, that one was hard to process
was disturbing to watch.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
All right. Cheryl Fox, she says, this episode was really, really good, but I do not believe Madison is dead. I think that Nick was furious that the Vultures were using a child to infiltrate their ranks. And will the group find Charlie and take her back? Someone should drive the El Camino back to Mel. Enos kept fanning the flames. Nick was always about justice, and he always connected with kids. I also think it is interesting that Charlie either stole the walkie-talkie from them or that she figured out what channel it was on, or that they were on. I also like that John and Luciana talked a little bit about why Laura and Luciana left. Did she love him? I hope they explore that some more. And I applaud Frank Delane. He made me want to see more of him as an addict and the journey that he took to go from just an addict to seeing the first infected in the church, as well as his dealer to stealing pills from his house. We went all the way around to his drying out, to Strand finding him and seeing the potential in him, and to his coming to his own, to finding other highs, as he covers himself with guts and walking among the dead, to finally seeing how crazy Troy Otto was and how he realized that may not be the way. What an unbelievable ride we went on. Thank you, Frank. I'll miss Nick a lot. And she also added that the two new showrunners on The Walking Dead stated that Madison was not dead. And she says, I don't believe she is. It would be a good twist if she was, though.
I did not hear them say that. So I,
yeah. And I didn't get to, I got just a part of the beginning, but yeah, I wasn't able to actually get to watch it all this time. Yeah. So I wouldn't know, but I mean, you know, that's the thing. I feel like, you know, when you're led to believe, like, I feel like, you know, that's part of the act, is that that's what they want us to believe. Cause of course we're all going to talk about it and be all like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, he, you know, Nick said this, or, and then now he's dead. And like, you know, the flowers or whatever that we get to see coming up. I could definitely see that she's still alive, but maybe she's just in some, you know, in some other different situation. Cause otherwise I don't want to see them start killing off all our main characters. That's my other fear.
Yeah. And to that, there's some more feedback that discusses this, and I've got more to say when we get to that part. But yeah, I don't remember them saying that. I know that they said that there's more story there, which I think is a foregone conclusion. So yeah, so let's move on anyway. Marc Olivier Dufour, he had issues with this episode. He says, "No, Nick, my favorite character. No." Then we have emojis that have hands on side of face to bawling your eyes out to red pepper of rage emoji. He says, "I think the Gimple influence is starting to show. Very bad decision-making by some characters, just like in The Walking Dead. Again, Morgan leaves his stick unattended. Why? Why was Nick so wanting to kill this guy? Why? Unbelievable things happening. The super truck gets stuck? Really? The flatbed truck spins out before actually pulling the super truck? I noticed that too, actually."
Yeah.
he says, bad, bad, bad. Well, to that, I was curious about him leaving his stick. Certainly not shutting off the horn. That made no sense at all. And, you know, but Nick wanting to kill this guy, I think we're going to see why. I think we have to let the story play out.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
there's got to be more to it. And you know, even he said they're a douchebag. I've already forgotten his name because I don't like him.
Ennis.
Ennis, yeah. Like, you know, when Ennis sees him, he's like, oh wow, like basically it's like, well, what, like, what happened to you, or how long has it been, or something like to that regard. So it's been some time, obviously, and something obviously happened.
I didn't think you'd see you again.
Yeah, something like that. So it's,
yeah. Whatever, pimento boy. So.
All right. Oh, and then just quickly, the flatbed truck, you know, pulling the super truck out, like, in a sense, I was like, the thing that was, you know, struck in my mind was like, okay, Alicia wasn't put, you know, the thing wasn't on. She wasn't like, pushing on the gas to make it go up the hill. And the angle of the truck trying to pull that up, like the angle of it, like that, it would have just not been a straight out of the ditch unless she was able to drive it. I don't know. It would have been just dragging it along the side. And anyways, it's physics.
I mean,
or geometry.
That could have been a result of just having in the wrong shift, the wrong gear. I mean,
yeah, I didn't even see that the truck was even on. So like the SWAT vehicle, but anyways, all right.
And before you read Todd's feedback, Kyle, I will say that this is the censored version of what Todd said. He used some more colorful adjectives before, and I let him know that we would have to modify what he said. So he modified it himself. So thank you for doing that, Todd.
All right.
And for what our rules are is like, for example, if the show says things like,
"Bullshit,"
we will play that, but we will not say it ourselves. We will not throw F-bombs or whatever. That's kind of how we do it. So just if anyone was ever curious, that's kind of how we do it, but we try not to curse. And if we do, we bleep it.
Yep.
As you've heard me do already this season.
Yeah, there's been a couple times.
Yeah, timeline. No. I'm trying not to do that this time. I don't want to do that.
All right. Todd Schwartzberg says, "Are you kidding me? Rest in peace, Nick. Serves me right getting emotionally invested in a character. Should have guessed as soon as Morgan gave him the book, he was doomed. Ugh." With a ugh face. "I suppose I should put in some positive thoughts. I like the choice to film the flashbacks in those brighter oranges versus the darker blues and grays in the present day. Very apocalypse world in the present. I also like how Morgan tried to teach Nick a better way. That first scene after Morgan unties Nick with the stick was hilarious. That's probably all the pluses. And I wish Charlie would have snuck a can of preserved or something and hid it for Nick and company after they drove off. But nah, no redemption for Charlie. I kind of don't blame her for killing Nick. Even given that Nick killed her father figure, I can't say I'm happy about it at all. But Nick should have not killed Innes. I mean, what could he have wanted to say to Nick? We'll never know. Maybe, wait, Charlie will kill you for this, or the Weevils were us."
To that end, I don't want Charlie to redeem herself here, at least right now. I want Charlie at this point to stay bad. I think it's too predictable for her to show signs of, you know, not being so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, I mean, she did a pretty bad thing here. She killed Nick, who, you know, had some affection towards her. So I certainly don't want her to show any signs of being good. I don't want her to sneak a can of preserves or anything to them.
Agree.
Yeah.
Well, no, and actually that's the other part too, is that this was in the now. And when we saw her in the before part, when she had the walkie-talkie that I think she stole from them at the
ballpark. Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. She was playing with it in that one scene in episode 2. But you do see her kind of give a little bit, have some kind of a conflicting look or feeling whenever they, you know, like, oh, yeah, basically it's like, we know exactly where you're going and we just get there first. Like, I got that from her then, but we don't know what's happened since then. Maybe, you know, Nick actually did something, you know, that was something important to her, or maybe whatever happens between them at the ballpark, you know, somehow it hurts her in some way, or she, you know, ends up being okay. Oh, no, you guys are no good. Maybe, you know, she saw Madison out of all of her talk about, like, no, we're here. You know, I want this to be your home. Maybe Madison did something that totally, like, basically, you know, went against everything that she'd been telling her. So, yeah, I don't know. She's a very, very interesting character to me at this point.
She's a spy
and a killer.
And I will throw a little bit of this in there. Although I don't know if I could say that she's psycho,
anyways.
All right, we got a little bit of feedback from Steve Cutter Blades. He says, "No crap. By far my favorite character on the show. This blows."
And Glennis Goltz, she gives a number of things. She says, one, I'm with you, Brian. I also think Madison is dead, as why would Nick be so driven to kill that vulture than if Madison was killed by the hand of the vultures? Two, do you think we'll see Nick and Enos back in the before timeline, as there are still a lot of backstory to be explained with what happened after the dam burst and back at the Diamond Settlement? The showrunners did say Enos would be back when they spoke to this on Talking Dead, but will we then also see Nick? I myself think so, or hope so, to at least complete Nick's story arc in that timeline.
Did you notice that you called up Enos and not Ennis? I think that's the...
now that you said it, I'm like...
I mean, that sounds a little bit anus, but... But obviously, there's some Enid, especially when I was talking about Enid so much in this episode.
It just kind of stuck in my brain.
It was funny. Okay, so this is what I was alluding to before when we had talked about certain things that I wanted to bring up, and I was holding back. So this is where I was holding it back for. Yeah, so Madison dying, I certainly said that last episode, and I had wondered that. And here's where I'm at now. Certainly, all signs point to that, and that is still a theory that I have as a possible scenario. However, when I think about it on more of a overall story arc kind of thing, that's where it starts to fall apart, okay? I really, really wonder if this is where the show is going. I mean, really going. They're pointing to that. They're making us think that maybe she's dead. But think about this, okay? If they've killed off Nick, which they certainly have, I mean, he has been confirmed dead. He was on the In Memoriam. He was confirmed by the showrunners in multiple places, and I believe by Frank Delane himself, that the character has died. So if they killed off Madison too, so if we find out that the reason why we're not seeing Madison is because she's dead, what does that mean in terms of the show? Who becomes the lead of this show? Morgan? I mean, right now in the cast wise, he is, he's got one of those Anns, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I know Scott Wilson had that, and of course Jeffrey Dean Morgan has that in The Walking Dead. So are you going to make him the lead? I mean, yeah, maybe you could, but I don't know if that works. I mean, we've talked about Morgan's emotional state several times before on The Walking Dead talk through. It's all over the place. And one day he's killing everything in his path, and then, the next day he's not killing another. And he certainly has kind of swung back towards that. I think he's more balanced than he was, say, during season 8, episode 14, Still Gotta Mean Something, when, he's killing all those, prisoner saviors and that, he's a little more balanced now and seems to be more right in the head, but he goes back and forth. So I don't know if that makes, Chris, you could say the same thing about Rick. He's gone back and forth on The Walking Dead too, but not to the extent of Morgan.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think he makes a great supporting, and certainly he makes a great second lead in the show, but I don't think I'm buying him as a lead. Alicia, could she be the lead? I don't know. I mean, of course, Alicia Debnam Carey has that experience on The 100. I always get that wrong. I believe it's The 100.
The 100, yeah.
That's what they call it. she was Lexa on The 100, and you know, so she has CW experience. So she would bring in that, 18 to 34 demographic, and certainly she is a beautiful woman. So that's all said, but I don't buy her as the lead of this show either. I think she's too young at this point, like for her character. I don't mean her as a person, but just in terms of being like the skilled leader, I don't think it makes sense for her to be the lead. I don't think it makes sense for, but I said in the notes here, I said, but if it was on the CW, I might buy it, but on this network, I don't. I don't think it could be any of the new cast either, because just being realistic here, if you look at the starring list, you know, of the credits, they're too far down on the list. I think the first one of the new ones that show up is Maggie Grace. She actually comes up in front of some of the existing cast, but I don't think she could pull it off. And I don't think, you know, Strand or anybody, you know, and this goes back to the thoughts that if they killed off Rick, I mean, some people think that they would kill off Rick in The Walking Dead. And we used to always put the disclaimer, if you're not caught up on The Walking Dead, you know, spoiler, but I have to think that the subset of people that aren't watching that show versus this show, I mean, listeners, if there are some of you that aren't up to it or had stopped watching and are watching this, I would love to hear that. So, you know, send us some feedback, because I'm certainly, if there are people that fit into that, I don't want to diss you here. So that's not my intention. But if you fit into that demographic of people that aren't, you know, haven't watched it or aren't up to date or whatever, stop watching, love to hear from you. I don't mean to spoil, don't mean to talk about it in that way. I'm just assuming that you are caught up. So if they were to kill off Rick, who would lead the show? Daryl? Michonne? Maggie? Negan?
What?
That's not true. That's impossible.
I don't see any of those. And I don't see this. I'm now, although all signs point to it, I see dire circumstances here. I see them certainly, you know, possibly thinking that she's dead. I see peril. I see maybe banishment. I see imprisonment. But in the end, I don't see death of Madison, because I think we will both see more of Nick and Ennis in the flashbacks. Certainly. All right. But anyway, do you have anything to say about that, or should we just move on?
Yeah. Or just quickly, just like, the whole point of the spinoff in the beginning was that this was going to be about the family dynamic and taking it from a different more of a viewpoint, not necessarily the whole apocalypse part of it, like that we get from The Walking Dead, but it's just more just about the family and, you know, what we're seeing. So for me, I'm thinking, yeah, we might lose, you know, we've already lost, like, you know, Curtis and now Nick, and now we're down to just Alicia and Madison. So Madison is not gone, and she might end up being gone by the end of the season. But yeah, I think that that's kind of been the point of the show, and just to be knocking everybody out and then putting new people, like, cause Morgan, I think Morgan's going to be gone by after the season. I don't think he's sticking around. I think something's going to happen to him, or he's just going to leave and go somewhere else, but we'll never know. Like,
really?
Yeah. I don't really see Morgan sticking around and being a prime character on Fear the Walking Dead. he might go back to The Walking Dead and then we'll just, I don't know. I just see these two shows being like coexisting together in the sense of maybe the same time frame, but I still feel like they're going to be separate, like NCIS Los Angeles and NCIS Miami. Like they're just still part of the same world, same timeline. Like they fixed all that part of it, but it's going to be two separate things.
Morgan goes back to Virginia.
Uh-huh. And say, hey,
in a very special, so they'll do the opposite in season 9, episode 1, we'll have season 4, episode 16 of this show, lead to some thing where, a character or Morgan, just decide, I got to get out of here. Some have suggested that Madison ends up on the
Walking Dead.
Maybe Madison even ends up a bad person, a villain. But I don't know. I don't think that works either. So
well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yes. All right. Last bit of feedback here is from Dieta. She says, overall, good episode. I wasn't expecting that death. That was totally out of the blue. I'm sad to see Nick go, with several teary emojis. So where is Madison? Is this the all new Fear the Walking Dead? Well, I would say yes to that. Looking forward to the season and how this is going to play out. Well, so am I. We have a lot of questions here, so. All right, so going into our episode notes, I'm going to go first here. So one of the things I noticed when Althea, went looking for her tapes, there was a special amount of time spent looking at the box that said the bog, 17 to 24. And obviously I think that means that those are the 17th to the 24th tape. That she, she's got these boxes probably of 8 tapes per box. So I guess these were recorded at the bog, which makes you wonder what the heck,
that?
Yeah. And what was the significance of that particular volume of tapes? Certainly, if they were tapes 17 to 24, that would indicate that the bog occurred. Later on, we don't know how many. Well, she definitely had more tapes than 24. Mm-hmm. We saw several boxes there, but certainly there's some significance to that. And I would love to see a flashback or some kind of explanation to that as to what I mean. This is really a good chance to get some kind of explanations, maybe explain some of the things, maybe finally explain those 9 days. And, I want to know Al's story, not just the stories that she's collected, but I want to know, what kind of journalist was she? Was she a war correspondent? Was she some kind of feature journalist? Mm-hmm. Was she a reporter?
And she might not even be a reporter, and she's just using that. But
oh yeah, so she's a pseudo journalist.
Yeah,
she needs to blogger. she needs to wipe her lens. That would be one thing I would say. But that camera certainly beat up.
Yeah.
Okay, so I did pay attention to the conversation between Strand and Althea. So what was going on with Strand? She mentioned hiding, whatever happened. And I looked at his hand more than once, try to figure out what was going on there. Were his fingers cut off?
I didn't see that.
That's.
I mean, I don't know. Were they? Because I didn't catch that. If there was, I never.
It looked like his fingers may have been cut off, like at the first, at the first knuckle. Yeah. you know?
Hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look, but
yeah.
That
or I know someone I'd seen somewhere about a scar on his hand. I don't know, but that was the one thing that I noticed is that it looked like it could have been a
missing or damaged or yeah.
Yeah, huh. Yeah. That was the thought that his fingers were cut off at the first knuckle. So, you know, like, so he just had like a little stubby on the four fingers there. But I don't know for sure if that's the case. But
I'll have to go back and look. Yeah, because if that is the case, if there's actually he is missing a finger or missing something, then okay, you know, I want to know more of that story.
We didn't see Naomi this episode. I'm starting to wonder if she could, in fact, be Laura.
Be Laura, and
if that's the case, you know, why is she using, or why at the diamond is she calling herself Naomi? Or I guess if her name is actually Naomi, why did she call herself Laura to John?
Right, right.
And I love how he's always giving out those candies.
Yeah.
I love this character. I want more and more of him. I want to hear his story. And I know, as I mentioned, I was watching the trailer, and there is a scene in the trailer of him that I think is a flashback. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. And the last thing that I have that I think it's going to be weird seeing what Nick went through, knowing that he's going to end up dead on the other side. I want to know what happened with Madison. I want to know what happened at the dam and, you know, how they ended up fighting each other, how they found Luciana. I want to know all of that. And hopefully we'll either see it in flashback or we'll hear about it. So
I agree. It is going to be weird, but that's kind of what's interesting about how this show is going so far. It's kind of like it threw that on us right now. And now we're like, wait, but we don't know, you know, we don't know what happened to that point.
That's all I've got for my notes.
Like I said before, I was like a lot of everybody, like the Facebook group and listeners, like their comments are pretty much on par with like what I had, and yeah, nothing off the top of my head that I can think of. Good episode, sad, just kind of excited about the future of this show.
All right. Well, now we have some news, ratings, and info.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
All right, so we have ratings for two episodes of Fear. So season 4, episode 2, last week, which was Another Day in the Diamond, that got a 1.09 in the 18 to 49 with 3.066 million. And normally we don't give the lie plus threes, but since we have that as well, I'll give that here. Going up to lie plus 3 days, it got a 1.6, so it gained like another, you know, 0.5 of a point, ratings point, and went up to 4.252 million, which I think is pretty good and set it up there quite well against some of the other shows on cable. Mm-hmm. And I was looking this week, looking at ratings just on the entire week, and looking at a lot of the ratings, you know, on regular network TV, and there's no way of sugarcoating it. Ratings are down across the board. I mean, there's been so much said about the Walking Dead's ratings going down, but everything's down. There were only two shows that got over 10 million last week, you know, so it just shows you that. And one was Roseanne, and we know Roseanne's been kicking it since it got back. Although maybe that might have been something. Yeah, no, actually that's not true. It wasn't last week that I saw that for Roseanne, because I think last week's Roseanne's were reruns.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. I only have alive plus same day for Talking Dead, but at the 11 o'clock hour, it's definitely not getting good ratings. It got a 0.23 last week in the 18 to 49 with 656,000 viewers. And since we're talking about them right now, compared to this week, it was pretty close to the same, but slightly lower. It got a 0.22 this week in the 18 to 49 with 637,000 viewers. So down 19,000 viewers. Fear got a 0.97 for Good Out Here in the 18 to 49 with 2.708 million. So it was down about 360,000 viewers, I think, total. And I was curious to see, because I noticed looking at the charts that I do on the Facebook group, I publish them, you know, whenever the ratings come out. Became obsessed many years ago with ratings, so I know some of you don't care, some of you do, but I'm going to keep doing it because it's my show, damn it. But looking at ratings, I noticed that there was a dip there. So season 3, episode 3, last year got a 1.02. So it was actually higher in the 18 to 49, but lower in the total viewers with 2.504 million. Now, I have to say that when the Live Plus 3 and the Live Plus 7 come out, and I'm predicting that next week's ratings are going to be higher than this week's, because that always seems to happen whenever there's a big episode. Next week, people are really compelled, you know, to see what happens. So I think that's going to happen this time along. Yeah, so that's it for ratings. And I think we talked about this episode enough, so I don't have any additional points there. But some news that I have. Well, we talked a little bit about this, but if you haven't watched Talking Dead this week, and there's also some links on the Facebook group about it, there are several articles with the showrunners explaining, you know, why Nick was killed off, explain the fact that Frank Delane wanted to leave. And there's an article from, I believe it was from Entertainment Weekly, that has an interview directly with Frank Delane that is linked on the Facebook group as well. So check all those out. It seemed to me that Frank, he mentioned some things about like an era being over. So I have to think that he was probably reacting to, you know, all the cast that has died, you know, and I was thinking, Laura, I was thinking about you too, of course. Daniel Sharman, Troy was gone. You know, there were some great scenes there. But certainly Travis dying, Ophelia dying. We don't know where the heck Daniel is yet. You know, so, but Erickson leaving and Troy Otto leaving, I said, or being killed off, Jake Otto being leaving. What was the older Otto's name? I can't think of it. Was it Jeremiah? I think Jeremiah.
Well, that's the dad, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, all those, you know, maybe that had something to do with it. But I got the thought that maybe he didn't like that Erickson was leaving. And it reminded me, in reading Frank Delane's interview, it reminded me of Jeffrey DeMunn from The Walking Dead, who played Dale, how he wanted to leave after Frank Darabont was, you know, taken off of the showrunner. So, because if you go back and look at Jeffrey DeMunn, he's played in a lot of Frank Darabont's movies and TV shows. He's been there all along. So I have to think that's playing into it. But like I said, if he landed a big movie role or Game of Thrones or some other, like Star Wars or something like that. That's possible too.
Yeah.
something big like that, could certainly, I would not stop him from going. I mean, it would make a lot of sense to go on to bigger and better things. He mentioned this a couple times in that article about how being on a weekly show is grueling. So the last thing to mention is that Lauren Cohan has, I guess she is signed. She was interviewed on Entertainment Weekly, and she is confirming that she will be back for season 9, part of the main cast. So I'm very thankful to see that. And yeah, so good for that.
Yep, good news.
Yeah. Pilots, there's never any guarantee that they are taken to series. I imagine if Whiskey Cavalier, which is the show that she's supposedly on, if that did get picked up to series, you know, maybe that might have a schedule that could be worked through. It's not unheard of. And on The Walking Dead, you know, characters kind of come in and out of the story. So, we may go several episodes without seeing Lauren Cohan. You know, we certainly saw that this season with Michonne and with Carl and with Maggie as well. So, and it's possible.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's not unheard of to do things like that.
Yeah. All right. So, that's it for news. So why don't you tell people how to submit their feedback?
All right. To submit your theories and feedback, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, or use the SpeakPipe widget, which allows you to record audio. And then you can also call 304-837-2278. Or like most people, they post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is at www.facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And the deadline normally for submitting feedback is Tuesday, May 8th at 6 p.m., 5 p.m. Central. You can also connect with us on our Twitter, which is at walkingdeadgsm.
Like Ken from Chicago.
Mm-hmm, exactly. All right. To support us, the best way you can is by subscribing to us in Apple Podcasts. And you can also go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple to get there. And while you're there, give us a rating or review.
We do want to thank the Steve38. And I noticed that it is not a new review, but he updated his 5-star review. I think that's Steve Brown. So if I've outed you, Steve, sorry about that, but I'm pretty sure that's you.
Well, thank you.
I've been upfront, at least, you know, on the podcast saying, I say at least, I try not to post too much about it on Facebook just because prying eyes, but, I do have a GoFundMe, I was unemployed on March 14th, and I'm recording this on May 2nd now at the time, May 3rd, Thursday morning here. It's still Wednesday. I'm speaking to Kyle from the future because he's Central, I'm Eastern time, but no job yet. I do have some leads, potentially some contract or freelance work coming. Hopefully I'll have good news to report. So things are looking up, but yeah, still I was looking today and our funds are starting to get depleted. So whatever help you can throw our way, it would be very helpful. So you can help support me at gofundme.com/TWDTT Brian Hard Drive. That's just using an old campaign that I use that I've repurposed. I need a lot more than a hard drive. You know, my wife and I both have a lot of prescriptions and medical costs that, you know, every time without any prescription care, they're really, really hitting us hard. Like yesterday I was at CVS and, you know, it was over $200. So just like I say, my wife hates it because she thinks that it's me panhandling. But yeah, whatever you can do to help support us during this trying time, you know, I hate to beg, but whatever you can do to help support would very much be appreciated. I would like to use it for much, you know, better things, but prescription and medical is certainly part of it, and we're still trying to sell our other place. So
yeah,
that's the one that once we get that sold, it'll be a little better. But until that happens, anyway, other ways to support the network. You can go to goldenspowermedia.com/support. So, Mark isn't here, but I'll just mention, you know, again, his computer, fried, and you know, I'm going to tell him he should maybe put up a GoFundMe himself. But yeah, his computer died. So he may be a little bit before he has any, episodes out. Hopefully he'll be back with us next week. I don't know, but, you can hear his podcast on, you know, various comic show, podcasts. I think, you know, focusing mostly on Netflix, but he also, I imagine he'll talk about, the Avengers movie, which I haven't seen yet. But that's a Panels to Pixels podcast, which is part of the Next Level Network. And you can also hear me on the Star Trek Discovery podcast, the very simply named StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com. And we should have an episode probably coming out this month near the end. I'll work with Ruthie on that coming out. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to give a shout out or plugs to?
You know, nice. I need to have my own other podcast besides this great one that I do.
No, you don't. No. I, in all seriousness, if you, you ever get that done, you know, I'll help you.
No, I know. I know exactly where to go for any kind of help. I just don't have any ideas of what I would want to do. Yeah, no, just, other than just, go Cubs go.
Yes. Kyle has a job as a legal scalper. That's what I call
I'm a ticket broker.
Yeah. He's a ticket broker.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, so far it's been an interesting year and you know, it's just the start of it. So
yeah. And he works in Chicago. So if the Cubs are doing well, Kyle does well. So,
which doesn't help their loss today.
Yeah.
They lost 12. It was like 12-2 against Colorado. Ouch. Exactly.
Well, you did finally win a World Series year before last. So that's something. Against the Indians.
Yep.
Anyway, the next episode is season 4, episode 4, which is titled Buried. We don't know who's written or directed this one, but the description from AMC is Al's questioning uncovers some surprising truths about the group's past. John Dory receives unexpected news.
What?
Well, it sounds interesting.
So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.